Welcome to your weekly Constitutional, a radio show about the Constitution, brought to you in partnership with the home of the Constitution, James Madison's Montpelier. My name is Stuart Harris, and I teach constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in beautiful Grundy, Virginia. And I'm speaking to you today from the studios of WETS HD1 and WETS 89.5 FM. You know, I came across a website a few weeks ago devoted to two topics that I just never seen them put together in quite that way. The two topics were sports and gay people. Sports and gay people. In fact, the name of the website is outsports.com, and that's its entire purpose. It's run by a fellow named Sid Ziegler, and Sid Ziegler is gay, and Sid Ziegler is an athlete, and Sid Ziegler loves sports, and he wanted to emphasize that there are lots of gay people who like sports, and there are lots of gay people who play sports, and he didn't think there was enough coverage of those issues. So he brought his journalistic skills to bear, and he devotes himself on the internet to those subjects. Now, when I found out about this website, it just happened to coincide with something else that lit up the internet this past fall. You may have heard about this. It was a letter that was written by an NFL player. His name is Chris Cluey, and it also had to do with the subject of gay people, specifically gay rights, and even more specifically, gay marriage. Ringing any bells? Well, let's just say that this is a controversy that Sid Ziegler is going to tell me all about here in just a second, a controversy that involves not only the Equal Protection Clause, but the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. And so we'll talk to Ziegler all about it. And after that, we're going to have a first on the show. We're going to have our first interview with an NFL player. Yep, you heard me right. We're going to talk to Chris Cluey. We're also going to hear from Brendan Ian Badejo, his recorded video, which kicked off this entire issue. And we're even going to hear dramatic readings of the letters that have gone back and forth and have caused so much controversy on the internet. You're going to hear it all here. So stick around. Let's start with Sid Ziegler. Well, Sid Ziegler of Outsport.com, welcome to the show.
Outsports.com. Common mistake. Common mistake.
Plural Outsports.com. Welcome to the show.
No, thank you.
Absolutely. Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. You certainly have an unusual background.
I do?
Yeah, I think so.
What's unusual?
An unusual thing. I mean, you're a guy who's actually out there, sort of on the forefront of the entire gay rights in sports thing. I think that's very interesting.
Well, as you know, I was born I won't make the joke, but growing up as the son of a plumber, I don't think of particularly unusual. But I suppose the topics that I write about now are I guess unusual still in a lot of corners.
Cutting edge. How about that? How about cutting edge?
Cutting edge. There you go.
All right. There you are. Sid Ziegler on the cutting edge. Right.
I'm cutting edge. You know, I've been writing about gay sports issues for about 12 years now. Mm-hmm. When we started back in 1999, really nobody was talking about this. Professional athletes wouldn't talk about the issue. Even reporters, they wouldn't ask questions. Trying to find a gay sports story on ESPN or the New York Times was like the needle in a haystack. It's changed a lot in 12 years. Now everybody's talking about it, from ESPN to, you know, radio in the Southeast. So it's transformed a lot, and it's been cool to kind of watch that change happen over the years.
Yeah, in fact, you know, of course, the visibility of gay people and the gay rights issue, I mean, gay people are very visible in most of the media these days, but it does seem like sports and you know, especially some of the more macho sports like football are some of the last holdouts in that regard.
Well, yeah, in that we don't have an openly gay athlete in one of the big four sports, I think that's very true. I think a lot of actors in Hollywood and people in the news, I mean, there's a lesbian who's one of the biggest stars in television, and she just will not come out of the closet. So, you know, it's not just men and it's not just sports. There are people who stay in the closet for various reasons everywhere, but certainly in sports, I mean, in professional sports, it is still a very deep closet. Mm-hmm. There's never been an active pro athlete to come out of the closet. So in that respect, you're dead on.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is, in particular in sports?
Well, I think it's the fear of the unknown. I think that's why everybody doesn't come out of the closet. They're just not sure what's going to happen, or they're simply afraid of what might happen. Mm-hmm. And in sports, you know, for many years, even now, what we get told is, I've had many interviews, and people ask me about what I see and what I've seen, and so often they'll say to me, these experts, they'll say, yeah, that's awesome, but we all know it will be so difficult to come out, and the person will be, you know, pushed to the corner of the locker room, and teammates won't like him anymore, and it's amazing that the media continues to push this idea that professional athletes and professional sports are deeply homophobic, when there is just a mountain of evidence to say that's simply not the case anymore. But yeah. I think the media continuing to push this idea that sports is deeply homophobic, I think that's a big part of it.
In fact, a number of former professional athletes have, in fact, come out, haven't they?
Well, I wouldn't say a number. In all of the big four sports, the number is either 6 or 7, and
well, a small number then.
It is a small. I guess mm-hmm. It is a number. It's a small number. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the plurality of them have come out. They're former NFL players, and we think of football as being this bastion of masculinity. And what's interesting is people often say that the first openly gay athlete will be in hockey, because hockey has a lot of people from Canada and Europe where homosexuality is a little more accepted. What's interesting is, of all the former athletes that come out, most of them have been from football, and none of them have been from hockey.
Yeah.
So
very interesting.
It's not many, 6 or 7, but there have been some.
Okay, who are they? Who are some of these names from the NFL who have come out?
David Coppé was a running back in the NFL for about, 10 years, back in the 60s and 70s, and he was the first. He played for the Detroit Lions and the Green Bay Packers, the Redskins, the 49ers, the Raiders. Missing one in there, but mm-hmm. He was a bit of a journeyman. Isaiah Tuolo was actually the last person ever to record a tackle against John Elway when he played in the Atlanta Falcons. They lost that game in the Super Bowl, obviously, but he was the last person ever to record a sack on Elway. Mm-hmm. Roy Simmons was with the New York Giants in the 50s. And Jerry Smith was a tight end with the Washington Redskins. Mm-hmm. So, and Jerry Smith unfortunately died of AIDS in the 80s.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, so there have been four from the NFL and none from the NHL. Only a couple from Major League Baseball, and only one from the NBA.
Very interesting. Well, of course, what prompted my call to you today was this recent situation that did actually happen in the NFL with the Baltimore Ravens. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Brendan Ian Badejo is a player with the Baltimore Ravens, and he has for a couple of years now been pretty out front on his support for same-sex marriage rights. And he recorded a video. Maryland is having a vote in November as to the future of same-sex marriage, and he recorded a video in support of those rights. Mm-hmm. Well, a delegate, they're called delegates, an elected official, state elected official in Maryland, didn't like that very much. This is a gentleman who has been pretty homophobic in the past, and so he sent a letter to the owner of the Baltimore Ravens. Essentially, it was a cease and desist letter demanding that Ian Badejo stop talking about this issue. And of course, that raised a host of issues, including First Amendment rights and same-sex marriage rights. But it was just fascinating for an elected official.
Yeah, let's pause there, since you mentioned the constitutional issues. Of course, this is in some sense not official government action. You don't have the government going to this Baltimore Ravens player and saying stop. But you do have a government official speaking to the owner of the team and trying to put indirect pressure, very important pressure when you're speaking to somebody's boss, to shut this guy up. So it is definitely a free speech concern. And I think that's probably what got people's attention first, was how this fellow from Maryland was willing to do such a thing.
Well, you know, the country's very confused about the First Amendment. And I'll take a recent issue that I'm sure you know about, where the owner, the president of Chick-fil-A,
right,
said that he was against same-sex marriage. And people back and forth were trying to accuse the other side of infringing on their First Amendment rights. And the First Amendment does not protect us from one another.
Right.
Dan Cathy has every right to say whatever he wants to say about same-sex marriage or me and you. And that's the beauty of the First Amendment, that we can have a dialogue about these issues, even the hot-button issues, and whether we like it or not.
Right.
What the First Amendment does is it protects you from actions by the government. And in that Chick-fil-A case, what happened was some mayors said, we are not going to allow Chick-fil-A to come into our cities in Boston and San Francisco and Chicago and Washington, D.C. And to me, that oversteps the bounds of the First Amendment, where people start to use their political positions, their government positions, to unduly and illegally influence what people say. And I think that Emmett Burns' letter on government letterhead, you know, he was very clear that he was a delegate in Maryland. And to me, it became a First Amendment issue when he brought his office into this.
Yeah, let's clarify this now, because are you a lawyer?
No,
you're not. Well, you're exhibiting a remarkable understanding of the First Amendment, and I applaud you for it. And I also applaud you for defending the First Amendment rights of those with whom you disagree. But we've got two situations here. You've got the Chick-fil-A situation, and the CEO of Chick-fil-A, the owner, I think, of Chick-fil-A, was against gay marriage. And people tried to suppress that. At least some big city mayors or city mayors at various places said they were going to suppress that by refusing to allow Chick-fil-A's into their towns. That is a First Amendment problem. When government officials try to shut somebody up, and I'm very pleased to hear you defending the First Amendment in that context, but to move back to Baltimore, to move back to Maryland, you've got an official in the legislative branch of the Maryland government, as you say, on letterhead apparently, sending out such a letter. And even though he's not technically, you know, acting on behalf of the entire legislature, one legislator can't do that, it certainly does bring the government into it, and it does present a First Amendment issue.
Well, look, I'm a journalist. My job is based on protecting the First Amendment.
That's where you get your knowledge.
I mean, I want everyone's First Amendment. The First Amendment is first. It's the most dear to the fabric of our country.
Right.
Freedom of religion and the freedom of speech. So if any time any government official or any government entity tries to influence in any way somebody's political speech, I don't care what it is, I don't care how hateful it is or whether you disagree with it, it's not okay. And I think you find most people in the media would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, good. And so what happened then? I mean, the legislator from Maryland sent his letter to the owner of the Ravens. What did the owner of the Ravens do with it? Apparently, he shared that letter with the media.
Well, I don't know the process of how it happened. One way or the other, somebody in the media found out. I don't know who gave the letter. I mean, everybody's talking about Emmett Burns, so it could have been his office. I just don't know. What I know,
Emmett Burns is the legislator.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, right.
What I know is that the owner of the Ravens said, my player can say whatever he wants to say. And there's been a pretty strong, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of people in support of Emmett Burns' action. What I've seen is a lot of reaction against what he said and how he did it. And interestingly, one of the people to go after Mr. Burns is Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey, who wrote a over-the-top, vitriolic, swear-filled letter that went viral. And I just got off the phone with the player, Chris Cluey, and he said that the First Amendment issue was really what just got him so angry, this idea that a government official would step in and do this. So what's happened is everyone's talking about this issue now, and Emmett Burns has gone back and clarified and said, you know, I did not mean to influence his right to say this. I just disagree with the fact that he's saying it. So Emmett Burns kind of saw the error of the official letterhead and what he said and has taken a step back.
I see. Well, yeah, Chris Cluey's letter has become viral, hasn't it? And so the First Amendment issue was the big thing for him, too, not the gay rights issue.
Well, it was, I think it was. I mean, he led off the letter with, "You must not have read the Constitution." So, and what I thought that Chris is actually is to me, it was, he's a really smart guy. He's not your average football player. This is a incredibly smart, incredibly well-read guy. And he, that First Amendment issue was really what, I mean, Chris Cluey is also a supporter of gay rights. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly part of it. But that First Amendment, what he saw as an attack on the First Amendment is what really just exploded in his head.
And so often the case, isn't it, that people will not necessarily take up a cause until they see the government, or in this case, a government official, cracking down in a way that they disagree with, and then that will actually rally the troops on the other side. And that appears to be what's happening in this circumstance as well. Do you think this is going to be helpful to the gay rights cause, ultimately?
You know, I think, unfortunately, that we live in a country today where people are so polarized. People would rather figure out ways that they disagree with other people instead of finding ways in which they agree. And I think, you know, with the same thing happened with the Chick-fil-A issue, is that people gravitate to one side or another, and they, you know, they stomp their feet and they draw a line in the sand and they support even more fervently their position. So I think that both sides probably benefited because both sides are angry about it. I think probably the pro-gay marriage side is angry that this guy tried to silence one of their supporters. And probably the people who are against gay marriage are upset about Emmett Burns being attacked. I mean, a lot of people are going after him because he's black and saying that he should understand civil rights because he's black. They're going after his religion. So I think that probably people on both sides probably both sides have gotten big donations in the last week because of it.
Right, I guess so. Let's talk about you for a second, if we can. I find this whole thing, your website, OutSports, I find your writings on the internet, I find them all very, very interesting, because you certainly don't yourself fit a lot of the stereotypes that are ascribed to gay men. You're an athlete. You're a fellow who has, if I recall correctly, you were one of the leading scorers on your track team, weren't you?
In high school, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was fast. I'm still pretty fast. I'm still pretty fast for, you know, late 30s, but right. I'm slowing. You know, once you hit that 35 mark, you start to slow down.
Mm-hmm. Well, what prompted you to become an activist?
Well, you know, back in 1999, like I said, nobody was talking about this, and to me, I do try to find the common ground with people that I disagree with, and I think sports are such a wonderful community builder, and for so long they had, for the gay community, been kind of a stake in the heart that kids remember growing up in high school and being bullied by the captain of the soccer team, or they felt uncomfortable in gym. And sports for so long has been something unattainable for gay people, and I just, myself and my business partner, we just didn't feel that was right. I mean, sports are such a beautiful piece of our culture's fabric. So that was a big piece of it, you know, and also reading about kids killing themselves, and the rate of suicide among teenagers is highest among gay and lesbian and transgender kids. So, you know, these kids are unfortunately, they're suffering bad, and so I just want to try to help that. I mean, seeing kids kill themselves, it's just not right. And another piece of it is that I've been with my partner now for 10 years, and it's funny. Tomorrow's his 40th birthday, and we've been talking about how is it possible that after 10 years, I find him more attractive than I did 10 years ago. I love him more. I want to spend more time with him than I did 10 years ago. And I think that, you know, I fail to find a good reason that I shouldn't be able to enjoy the same rights and privileges as everybody else. I understand the other side, but I just really like to marry this person. So those are some of the big reasons that I've gotten into this.
And you're in California, right?
Yeah.
And what's the current status of gay marriage in California? I know you've been having all kinds of lawsuits and constitutional amendments. What's happening right now?
Well, right now there are 18,000 same-sex married couples. That number hasn't changed in the last 2 years, last 4 years. Back in 2008, we were allowed to marry, and then it was put to a popular vote, and it was ended. The courts at every level have overturned that, but they keep putting stays on it until it gets ultimately resolved by the Supreme Court, or that's the next level. I mean, it's going to go to the United States Supreme Court, or mm-hmm. it's not. And really, the issue at hand isn't necessarily same-sex marriage. It's how same-sex marriage was legalized, and then that civil right was then taken away by a ballot measure. Mm-hmm. So at the core of the case isn't necessarily an argument for same-sex marriage based on the Constitution. It's a legal argument of how rights were stripped from people.
How long was the window of opportunity for gay people to get married in California?
I think it was 7 months.
7 months. And you and your partner weren't able to avail yourselves of that window, eh?
We were living in New York at the time.
Oh.
And of course, we moved to California just after they made it illegal.
Oh, no.
And then New York made it legal after we left. So
your timing is off, Sid. Your timing is off.
I know. But, you know, ultimately, I feel like, you know, when I talk to athletes and I talk to people, it doesn't matter whether they're in Tennessee or Alabama or North Dakota or California, people are starting to kind of see that they're just getting to know gay people and getting to see their relationships. And as I talk to people, like a lot of pro NFL players, they say, you know, my brother came out a couple of years ago. I have a cousin who's gay. And I think that helps people understand that I'm not looking to, I don't want to change the fabric of our culture based on with marriage. I want to be able to marry the person that I love, and so I think people are seeing that more and more.
Well, Sid Ziegler of Outsports.com, we're running out of time. Any final thoughts?
No, it's just a fascinating time. I mean, the gay rights issues are key. Well, it's interesting. Gay rights issues are core issues of our time, but also the intrusion of the federal government and the government on our lives. You know, we're going to have an election in 2 months to decide whether the government, how deeply the government can intrude on our lives. So this issue, it's not going away.
I will agree with you there. Well, Sid Ziegler of Outsports.com, thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Great talking to you.
It's your weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I've just been speaking with Sid Ziegler from Outsports.com about the famous internet letter from Chris Cluey. After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, and then we'll come back and we'll begin with the videotaped statements of Brendan Ian Badejo of the Baltimore Ravens, the statements in support of gay marriage that started this whole controversy. Stay tuned.
It's called free speech. It's called free speech, something the Constitution guarantees. Some folks might be offended, but we all have to defend it if we truly want this country to be free. Fast forward now, a bunch of years, I'm driving cars and shifting gears. Some guy stopped short, I had to slam my brakes. The guy driving the car behind me wasn't feeling very kind. He came up next.
We'll be right back. Well, Kelly Carmichael, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Stuart?
I am great too. We'll just be great together. And give me a great question now.
All right. A United States treaty is a formal agreement with one or more nations. B, a formal agreement with one or more nations and part of the supreme law of the land of the United States. C, part of the supreme law of the land of the United States. Or D, ratified by the United States House of Representatives.
Okay, so we're talking about treaties and we're looking for the various attributes of a treaty, the various things that describe a treaty under our Constitution. So it could be one of these things or it could be some combination. So let's go over those answer choices again, please.
Sure. United States treaty is a formal agreement with one or more nations.
Okay.
A formal agreement with one or more nations and part of the supreme law of the land of the United States.
Okay, so B is both of those things, part of the supreme law, land, and an agreement. Okay.
And C is just part of the supreme law of the land of the United States.
Okay.
D, ratified by the United States House of Representatives.
Okay. So we have to figure out which of those four options best describes a treaty under our Constitution. Let's see what our contestant has to say. On the line, we have Zach. Zach, where are you from?
I am from Parisburg, Virginia.
Parisburg, Virginia. That's a fascinating name. Who's Parisburg named after?
After a guy, his last name's Paris. He was there during, I think, the 1700s, maybe, one of the first guys in our town.
Oh, really?
And they actually have a cemetery named after him. It's on the AT.
Mm-hmm. So the Appalachian Trail?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. So if you travel that, you can stop by the Paris Cemetery there.
I may very well do that. I love looking at old gravestones and cemeteries. And moreover, I've driven through Parisburg, I believe, many times. That's between Grundy and Blacksburg, where Virginia Tech is, isn't it?
Yes, sir. I'm about 20 miles southwest of Blacksburg on 460.
Right, and it's right near the New River, too, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
That's a wonderful place for whitewater rafting, for canoeing. You're a lucky fellow. You're from a very pretty place.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. I take pride in being from there.
Well, good for you. And now that I've thoroughly distracted you from the question, let's remind ourselves that we're looking for a definition of what a treaty is under the Constitution. And there were four answer choices. Let me go through them and you tell me what you think of each one. First of all, is it a formal agreement with one or more nations?
That one sounds pretty good right now, because you would think a treaty is trying to get everyone to come together for a common cause there.
Well, that does sound kind of like what you think of when you think of treaties, but you want to pick that one?
Well, I might have to go through a few more here.
Okay, well, let's go through B. It says the same. B is the same thing. It's a formal agreement with one or more nations and part of the supreme law of the land. What do you think of that answer choice?
That also sounds well. It added that extra in there. Let's continue on.
Okay, what about C, which is just part of the supreme law of the land?
I would think you would have to, you know, a treaty is usually between two parties, so I would probably rule that one out.
Okay, so we're going to cross off C. What about D, ratified by the House of Representatives?
You know, that one would sound, you know, they make treaties all the time and law. But I think I'm going to have to go with, I'm in between A or B, and I think I'm going to have to go with A.
A, which is simply and only a formal agreement with one or more nations. Okay, but you're not picking B, which also says it's part of the supreme law of the land.
You know, I'm really torn, and I know there's treatises everywhere. And
treaties, not treatises. Treatises is a fancy law book, but a treaty.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going with A. I'm going with final answer there.
Final answer is A. Well, let's go to Kelly and see what she has to say. So, Kelly, what is the answer?
The answer is a combination. B, a formal agreement with one or more nations and part of the supreme law of the land of the United States.
Zach, I'm sorry. You were so close.
I was. I was in between those two, though.
Yeah, you were. You were so close, and you had really good reasoning there. And I think you went with I'm guessing what many listeners went with, because most of us, you know, the common sense meaning of a treaty is that it's an agreement between nations. That's true. But what's really fascinating here, and what might give you some consolation for not, you know, not missing this, is that it's an obscure part of the Constitution. It's part of Article 6, which is called the Supremacy Clause. And in that clause, it says that not only is the Constitution itself the supreme law of the land, it also says that two other things, along with the Constitution, are the supreme law of the land. One of those things is federal statutes, and the other thing is treaties. Who knew?
Who knew?
It's really extraordinary, and just to go through the it has all kinds of implications. We don't have time for them all right now, but that was one of the things I was really sort of surprised by when the first time I read it. If you were tempted to have picked answer choice D, the ratification by the House, that was not a bad choice, but it's just slightly incorrect, because treaties are ratified by the Senate, not by the House. But they do have to be ratified. But what most people don't know is that once they are arguably just as powerful as the Constitution itself, or maybe not quite, but almost as such. And so they'll govern everything. They'll govern even things that happen in the states. So, Zach, I'm sorry you don't get a T-shirt, but you do get a copy of the Constitution. And read it with pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for playing. It's your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and we're talking about gay rights, we're talking about the First Amendment, and we're talking all about it with Chris Cluey of the Minnesota Vikings. But before we get to Chris, let's hear from Brendan Ionbadejo of the Baltimore Ravens and the statement, the videotape statement, that started this whole controversy.
I'm Brendan Ionbadejo, a linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. I believe we should be doing everything that we can to make Maryland families stronger, which is why I support marriage for gay and lesbian couples who want to make a lifetime commitment to each other. People from all walks of life, including gay and lesbian couples, want their children to be in stable homes and protected under the law. Join me. It's the right thing to do.
Well, that's what started this whole thing, and as Sid Ziegler's already told us, that statement from Brendan Ionbadejo prompted a response from a Maryland legislator. We'll hear a little bit more about that later. But then that prompted a response from Chris Cluey. And so now let's hear from Chris. And this is a first on your weekly Constitutional. This is the first time we've had an interview with an NFL player, and I must say I was pretty impressed. Well, Chris Cluey, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well. Now, tell me, who are you and what do you do?
I am a raconteur, a troublemaker, and also a punter for the Minnesota Vikings.
In that order. All right. Well, you're a very impressive punter for the Minnesota Vikings and equally impressive in your other pursuits. And in fact, it's one of those other pursuits that we're calling you about. I guess it would fall under the heading of troublemaker. You apparently stepped into a very troublesome situation that originated out in the state of Maryland.
Yeah. There was a state delegate there by the name of Emmett Seaburns Jr. who wrote a letter to the Ravens, basically saying that they needed to stifle the speech of one of their employees, Brendan Ionbadejo, because he had been speaking out in support of same-sex marriage, and Delegate Burns didn't like that. Now, the unfortunate problem for Delegate Burns was that he wrote his response on official state stationery and referred to himself and his constituents when he wrote his letter, and in my mind, that was a pretty egregious violation of the First Amendment.
Yeah, that's a big issue. In fact, the letter actually said something along the lines of, you know, stop your guy from speaking out on these issues. He's just a football player. Let him play football.
Right, exactly. And while, you know, I support Brendan and same-sex marriage, you know, for me, the primary issue is the fact that as a elected government official, to not know why you can't stifle someone's free speech, to use your office to stifle someone's free speech, that's very worrisome to me, because that shows a fundamental misunderstanding or lack of knowledge about what the Bill of Rights grants us as citizens.
Right. Well, let's give a little bit of background here. Now, Maryland, I understand, passed a statute earlier this year that authorized gay marriage.
And yes, that's correct.
And then they were having a referendum to challenge that statute. In other words, the voters were given a chance to reject that statute that their legislators had passed. And in the midst of all of this, that's when Brendan spoke out in favor of gay marriage, correct?
Yeah, yeah. He recorded a, I think it was a YouTube video, kind of, you know, pointing out that, that it doesn't really, you know, affect anyone if someone else is allowed to get married. You know, it's a civil rights issue. It's a human rights issue. It's the fact, you know, treat other people the way you want to be treated.
So this was a very hot issue in Maryland earlier this year. And I'm just to cut to the chase, what happened with that referendum? Did they actually end up authorizing gay marriage in Maryland?
Yeah, yeah. They ended up passing it in Maryland. And they also ended up passing similar referendums in both Washington and Maine. And then here in Minnesota, we defeated a proposed constitutional amendment that would have banned same-sex marriage.
I see. So victories across the board, at least in those states.
Well, look, 4-4.
4-4. Well, look, there are at least two major constitutional values at issue here. And one of them, of course, is equality. And that's the underlying issue. And then the other one is free speech, as you mentioned it. But let's try to take them in order. Let's first talk about equality. Why did you decide to pick this issue, gay marriage or gay rights generally?
Well, for me, it's because it's a fundamental human right and it's a civil rights issue of our time. You know, you look at it and the Supreme Court has clearly ruled in Loving versus Virginia that the right to get married is an inalienable human right. And the fact that we're trying to discriminate against that, you know, that people are not being allowed to get married to who they want, to me, that is going against what this country is founded on. And that's the freedom to live your life free of the oppression of other people.
Well, it is remarkable that someone who is a professional athlete, someone who's in the public eye, and someone who's in an extremely macho sport like professional football should take up such an issue. Did you have, what sort of reaction did you get in NFL locker rooms and among your teammates to when you spoke out on this?
Well, it's been positive. I've had, I had a lot of guys come up to me and say, you know, while we may not agree with you on the same-sex marriage part, you know, we definitely appreciate you speaking up for Brendan because that is a First Amendment issue. And then I've had a lot of guys come up to me and say, we think you did the right thing, you know, on both stances. And it hasn't just been people on my team. I've had guys come up to me, you know, before games, playing other teams and say, you know, hey, good job. We appreciate what you did.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed in some of your public comments since this controversy erupted that you've made references to the earlier struggles of professional athletes such as Jackie Robinson. Do you feel like you've picked up that cause in the same sort of sense?
Well, you know, it's not just me. Brendan has been doing this, you know, for a couple of years now. He's definitely been far more active than I have in terms of length. You know, I'm kind of the new kid on the block here. And there's also other guys in the league. There's Connor Barwin with the Texans. I believe his brother is gay. And then Scott Fujita with the Browns. He's been a very big proponent of human rights and same-sex marriage rights. And, you know, I think it's all of us working together trying to change this perception that the NFL is this hidebound, macho stereotype. You know, it's no longer that anymore. It's a changing world. It's a more progressive world.
Mm-hmm. Are there any active NFL players who have come out?
No, not to my knowledge. I mean, I'm sure there's got to be at least two or three just from simple statistics. But, you know, no one has felt the, you know, I guess kind of the freedom to come out yet. And hopefully one of these days someone will. They'll be comfortable enough in who they are and their ability as a football player to say, you know what, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what my sexuality is because when I step on the field on Sunday, I'm there to help the team win games. And hopefully what me and Brendan and Connor and Scott can do is provide sort of a support and let those players know that, you know what, if you do decide to come out, we'll be there to help you.
I see. Now, going back to the beginning of this controversy, we know that Emmett Burns tried to pressure the owner of the Ravens into silencing Brendan. Did he achieve that? What did the Ravens do?
He pretty much achieved the exact opposite of what he set out to do. Because the owner of the Ravens, Steve Biscotti, he told Brendan, you know, he was 100% behind Brendan. I know the organization as a whole has been very supportive of what Brendan's been doing. And I think it also kind of acted as a catalyst for more of a national discussion on same-sex marriage and gay rights in general. And the fact that we have American citizens that pay their taxes, that serve in our military, that are prohibited from benefiting under the same laws that everyone else is. And to me, that's plain and simple. It's discrimination. You can't spin it any other way.
What about the Vikings? When you started speaking out in all of this, what sort of reaction have you gotten from your own organization?
They've been very supportive of my right to speak out. They were a little worried about the language because.
yes, indeed.
It was a little salty in the original letter, and I can appreciate that. You know, the NFL is a broad spectrum business, and you have to appeal to a bunch of different people. So, in subsequent letters and appearances, I toned it down. You know, I made my initial point, and you know, I didn't need to see lustful sea monster going forward.
Speaking of that, was that a deliberate choice on your part to, I mean, it was a hilarious letter, and it was very well crafted, but obviously it did contain a lot of language that a lot of people would find objectionable. Did you do that intentionally?
Yeah, that's kind of the way I write. I'm a child of the internet. You know, I grew up playing a lot of online games and kind of immersed in that culture of message boards and forums, and I found that, you know, if you're unable to make a point that people will remember, no one's really going to listen to you. And for me, I found the best way to make that point is to have a carefully crafted and constructed logical argument that's firmly buttressed by rationality, and then to also include in some very inventive swear words.
Yeah, I think you achieved that latter goal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The juxtaposition between the two of them, you know, really causes it to stick in people's minds, and so they'll remember the swear words, and then that kind of acts as a trigger to remember the rest of what was being talked about, and it also gives people a chance to speak about something that normally they may not know how to broach a conversation about. You know, they can talk to a friend or someone they know about. Hey, did you see this letter where this guy, you know, came up with all these words? And then as they're talking about it, they can get to what the rest of the letter was about.
It's your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm talking to Chris Cluey, the punter for the Minnesota Vikings, and also a raconteur and troublemaker, according to himself. After the break, we'll have our This Week at Montpelier. Then we'll come back and we'll finish our discussion with Chris Cluey. And after that, I promise you, we'll actually read the letters that have gone back and forth blazing across the internet. We may have to bleep a little language here and there, but we're going to give you the gist of it. Stay tuned.
Freedom of speech, let them take it from me. Next, I'll take it from you. Then what you going to do? Let them censor books, let them censor art. CMRC, this is where the witch hunt starts. The sense of what we see, we read, we hear, we learn. Your books will burn. You better burn. Make it out. We should be able to say anything. Our lungs were meant to shout. Say what we feel. Yell out what's real. Even though it may not bring mass appeal. Your opinion is yours. My opinion is mine. If you don't like what I'm saying, fine.
Well, it's a quiet week at Montpelier. It's the holidays, and the staff is, of course, trying to enjoy some family time. So I thought it'd be a good time to break out an interview I did with a couple of visitors to Montpelier, a couple of fellows, one of whom, at least, is a teacher, and who share their experiences with us.
Stuart Cohen, Brooklyn, New York.
Uh-huh.
And we're here for the weekend, well, so Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been to Montpelier, of course. We went to Jefferson's yesterday and to Monroe's. And it's
so you've done the presidential house tour, basically.
Right,
you've seen them all.
Yes, very interesting.
Good. Now, I'm just curious, is there a single ticket you buy for all three, or is it separate? I'm not familiar with how it's done.
No, well, we did some special tours.
Uh-huh.
Okay, my name is Robert Davidson. I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
Right. It's not that I could have told where you guys were
okay.
from. Not at all.
If not, I got my...
exactly. Okay.
Yeah. I teach government and history, so of course...
Oh, do you really?
I have a very special interest. And we did a special tour at Montpelier called Meet the Madisons, where we go on the tour at 8:30 in the morning before the place opens up, and have a much more intimate and private tour.
Right.
And at Monticello, we did a behind-the-scenes tour.
Very nice.
So, and there's also a program called the President's Passport.
Oh, that's right. I've heard of that. Yeah, tell me about that.
You get, basically, you sign up online at the Monticello website,
mm-hmm.
and you get various discounts. So, for example, we came down on Amtrak, we got 40% off for a companion.
Oh, nice.
And our hotel, we got 25% off the rate plus free breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And discounts in various shops like...
Jeez Louise, this sounds like a great deal. So you're all the way up in Brooklyn, you do all this stuff online, and from the moment you step on Amtrak, you're getting discounts.
Yes.
And you're seeing all these things at the same time around Charlottesville.
Oh, yes, definitely. We're going, like, we're based in Charlottesville, and we're going, like, Yesterday we went east, today we went north, tomorrow we're going west, and Monday south.
Well, that is absolutely tremendous. I'm so pleased. Now, what's been your favorite thing about Montpelier? Do you have a favorite thing?
This whole tour.
The mansion itself?
Excellent, yeah. The historical information we gathered. Yeah.
Did you learn anything that you didn't know before about Madison or about the Constitution?
Well, I did because I haven't studied this in a long time. Robert, you know, has been teaching this for quite a while.
Well, you're the teacher, Robert. Did you learn anything new or did you already know it all?
No, definitely, because I liked seeing how the house has been restored to the way it was in the 1820 era. And there's plenty to learn. I mean, you can. We had an excellent guide. And it was nice seeing the furnishings, and also the room upstairs where they peel back, and you see exactly how the house was restored, the different layers.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
That is amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm really glad you enjoyed that. Maybe you can bring a school group down here one day if you're.
I'd love to.
Well, maybe you have to get enough budget, enough money in the budget to bring them down sometime.
No, it's enough budget in the kids because. The kids would have to pay for it, and I've tried for a few years to try to just bring them down, even to Washington, D.C.
Right.
And we ask them, who wants to go? Everybody raises their hand, and when it comes time to pay the money.
Sure, it's really rough, and I understand that completely. I do know here, though, at Montpelier, that a fellow by the name of Christian Coates is in charge of educational outreach for school groups, and they will cut you a really good deal. And arrange what you need, but of course you'd have to get here on your own. So I wish you luck overcoming that hurdle. It's a big one, I know.
Yeah. And one thing else that we liked very much at this place is it's not just the mansion. It's the whole experience, the gardens, the beautiful trees.
Yeah, those gardens are amazing, aren't they?
And the view, the view of the Blue Ridge.
Oh, yeah, and from the front porch,
And even the... showing the shadow of the outbuildings.
Right,
and
the slave community, right.
And one thing that we are looking forward to doing is at 1 o'clock we're doing a specialty tour from slavery to freedom.
That's supposed to be excellent. I've not taken it yet, but it's supposed to be an excellent tour. You guys are like the specialty tour guys. you go for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now let's finish our discussion with Chris Cluey, the punter for the Minnesota Vikings. Well, Christy, mind if I ask you a little bit about your own background, especially when it comes to public affairs? How did have you always been interested in public affairs? Have you always gone out and crusaded in causes?
I majored in history and political science in UCLA, and so I got a educational background on this. I've never really been super active in terms of the public eye and in terms of policy. It's more been, I've talked to the people around me, I've talked to friends and family and stuff like that. But this one was mainly because a group in Minnesota, Minnesotans for Marriage Equality, asked me over Twitter if I would help them, try and defeat this amendment in Minnesota. And I said, yeah, because I figured it was the right thing to do. And kind of how my makeup is that if I'm going to commit to something, you're going to get my very best effort. So it was, I wrote the letter, saying that, hey, this is what I believe. This is how I feel, that this is, it's a travesty that this is going on in 21st century America.
Well, once your NFL career is over, and of course we hope that doesn't happen for many years, but it's a young man's sport, and when eventually the career is over, do you think he might go into public affairs?
I don't really see that for my case, because I'm not a huge fan of the way our political system is turning out right now. It seems like there's entirely too much money being used to influence kind of political affairs and how politics is conducted. And right now, the great part about our political system is that it's very hard to change it. The really bad part about our political system is it's very hard to change it. So once you let changes creep in, which is the case with, increased campaign contributions, Citizens United, stuff like that, it's difficult to make sweeping changes to try and fix those problems. So I'm thinking that I'll probably be able to do more good just by continuing to call out what I see and hopefully make people aware that, you have to be wary of what people say and then what they do. Don't judge people on what they say, judge people on what their actions tell you about them.
Right. Well, you have a number of interests, not just public affairs and not just football. You're also a bassist, aren't you, in a band?
Yes, I'm in a band called Tripping Icarus, and we're a rock band with a bit of a political message. Kind of, you know, Rage Against the Machine, but not quite as ragey. we're influenced heavily by
gently complain about the machine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a moderate complaint.
But do you write any of the lyrics for your songs?
Our singer does all the lyrics, and then we all give feedback on them. So it's very much a collaborative effort where we'll all write our own parts and give feedback to each other on our parts. So if someone is playing something that they don't like playing, then, you know, we'll change it, because what's the point of playing music that you don't enjoy playing?
Understood. Well, looking to the future again, what do you predict about the future of gay marriage and gay rights in the United States?
Well, I think barring any sort of catastrophe, like complete financial meltdown or another war, then I think the same-sex marriage and gay rights will continue towards more freedom, because societies have shown, you know, over the arc of history that they tend towards more freedom, not less, because it gets more people involved and it's ultimately more beneficial for that society. Now, hopefully we can keep any of those disasters from happening, because if they do, then people tend to worry more about, you know, their own skins and making sure they can survive. It's kind of the Malthusian hierarchy of needs. So,
Hierarchy of needs. Now, for some reason, I have never heard that expression before.
Yeah, it basically states it's like a pyramid that at the base of the pyramid, humans need, you know, food, shelter, and reproduction. Like, those are your basic needs that need to be met.
Right.
Once you've met those, then you can move on to, you know, society, culture, etc. Once those are met, you can move on to, you know, higher needs, which is, you know, entertainment, stuff like that.
Chris, you're quite an intellectual.
I read a lot of books.
Well, that's obvious in all of your commentary. Well, I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, but before we go, any final thoughts on the gay marriage rights or on the First Amendment?
Just hopefully that people will continue to do the right thing and really just see this, that this is the civil rights issue of our time. I mean, it's the same struggle that we had 50 years ago with segregation, the same struggle that we went through 100 years ago with suffrage. And it's the same struggle we went through 150 years ago with slavery. It's the fact that people want to be free to live their lives just the same as everyone else. They don't want anything special. They just want the same rights that everyone else has. And it really boils down to treat other people the way you'd like to be treated.
Well, Chris Cluey, punter for the Minnesota Vikings, raconteur and troublemaker, thank you so very much for being on your weekly Constitutional.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, we spent this entire episode talking about an exchange of letters, and now it's time to read them. Now, I wish that the Maryland legislator, Emmett C. Burns, had responded to our request to appear on the show, but he did not do so. And therefore, I've recruited Bob Hoffman, one of our distribution engineers, to stand in and read the legislator's letter.
Dear Mr. Bisciotti, I am a delegate to the Maryland General Assembly and a Baltimore Ravens football fan. I find it inconceivable that one of your players, Mr. Brendan Iambadejo, would publicly endorse same-sex marriage, specifically as a Raven football player. Many of his constituents and your football supporters are appalled and aghast that a member of the Ravens football team would step into this controversial divide and try to sway public opinion one way or the other. Many of your fans are opposed to such a view and feel it has no place in a sport that is strictly for pride, entertainment, and excitement. I believe Mr. Iambadejo should concentrate on football and steer clear of dividing the fan base. I am requesting that you take the necessary action as a national football franchise owner and that he be ordered to cease and desist such injurious actions. I know of no other NFL player who has done what Mr. Iambadejo is doing. Please give me your immediate response. Sincerely, Emmett C. Burns.
Now let's hear Chris Cluey's rejoinder, courtesy of our executive producer, Wayne Winkler.
Dear Emmett C. Burns, Jr., I find it inconceivable that you are an elected official of the United States government. Your vitriolic hatred and bigotry make me ashamed and disgusted to think that you are in any way responsible for shaping policy at any level. The views you espouse neglect to consider several fundamental key points, which I will outline in great detail. 1. As I suspect you have not read the Constitution, I would like to remind you that the very First Amendment in this founding document deals with the freedom of speech, particularly the abridgment of said freedom. By using your position as an elected official when referring to your constituents in order to implicitly threaten the Ravens organization, to argue that the Ravens should silence Brendan Iambedejo from voicing his support for same-sex marriage, not only are you clearly violating the First Amendment, but you come across as a narcissistic fromunderstang. What on earth would possess you to say something so mind-bogglingly stupid? It baffles me that a man such as yourself, a man who relies on that same First Amendment to pursue your own religious studies without fear of persecution from the state, could somehow justify stifling another person's right to free speech. To call that hypocritical would be to do a disservice to the word. Mind-fuckingly, obscenely hypocritical starts to approach it a little bit. 2. You wrote, many of your fans are opposed to such a view and feel it has no place in a sport that is strictly for pride, entertainment, and excitement. Holy fucking shitballs. Did you seriously just say that as someone who is, according to your Wikipedia page, deeply involved in government task forces on the legacy of slavery in Maryland? Have you not heard of Kenny Washington, Jackie Robinson? As recently as 1962, the NFL still had segregation, which was only done away with by brave athletes and coaches daring to speak their mind and do the right thing. And you're going to say that political views have no place in a sport? I can't even begin to fathom the cognitive dissonance that must be coursing through your rapidly addled mind right now. The mental gymnastics your brain has to tortuously contort itself through to make such a preposterous statement are surely worthy of an Olympic gold medal. The Russian judge gives you a 10 for beautiful oppressionism. 3. This is more a personal quibble of mine, but why do you hate freedom? Why do you hate the fact that other people want a chance to live their lives and be happy, even though they may believe in something different from what you believe, or act differently from you? How does gay marriage affect your life in any way, shape, or form? Are you worried that if gay marriage becomes legal, all of a sudden you'd start thinking about penis? Oh shit, gay marriage just passed. Gotta get me some of that hot dong action. Will all your friends suddenly turn gay and refuse to come to your Sunday ticket grill outs? Unlikely, gay people enjoy watching football too. I can assure you that gay people getting married will have zero effect on your life. They won't come into your house and steal your children. They won't magically turn you into a lustful cock monster. They won't even overthrow the government in an orgy of hedonistic debauchery because all of a sudden they have the same legal rights as the other 90% of our population. Rights like Social Security benefits, child care tax credits, family and medical leave to take care of loved ones, and COBRA health care for spouses and children. You know what having these rights will make gay Americans? Full-fledged citizens, just like everyone else, with the freedom to pursue happiness and all that entails. Do the civil rights struggles of the past 200 years mean absolutely nothing to you? In closing, I would like to say that I hope this letter in some small way causes you to reflect upon the magnitude of the colossal foot-in-mouth cluster you so brazenly unleashed on a man whose only crime was speaking out for something he believed in. Best of luck in the next election. I'm fairly certain you might need it. Sincerely, Chris Cluey. P.S. I've also been vocal as hell about the issue of gay marriage, so you can take your I know of no other NFL player who has done what Mr. Iambedejo is doing and shove it in your closed-minded, totally lacking in empathy pie hole.
Well, that's our show. The very first one we've had featuring an NFL player and one of the funnest ones to produce in recent memory. Thanks so much to Chris Cluey and to Sid Ziegler of Outsports.com. Our distribution engineers are Bob Hoffman and Larry Mayer. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. My name is Stuart Harris. And remember, it's your Constitution, and you need to learn about it.